This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs, is here to help me explain. Suddenly, Beijing, the People's Republic of China in Africa, bad acting, has to do with the Kingdom of Eswatini and King Mswati III. It's simple enough to explain it first. The Eswatini government recognizes the Republic of China, a.k.a. Taiwan. The Beijing, the People's Republic of China, seeks to intimidate, purchase, annoy, harass, threaten anyone who doesn't give up its dependence on a Republic of China's liberty and come over to the PRC side, such as we've seen in the Solomon Islands. Gregory, what is the twist here different from the Solomon Islands? Why did Sogavare of the Solomons make the decision to turn to Beijing and King Mswati does not? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, the reality is that Prime Minister Sogavare, even before he was elected as Prime Minister, had done the deal with Beijing for cash money that he was going to switch relations by the Solomon Islands from Taiwan to the mainland, to communist China. And so he did so. And in fact, I suggested even at that time in 2019 that Taiwan should just outbid the mainland because it would have been worth it. 2019 was the year in which Beijing said it was going to change every country that recognized Taiwan, which are about 15 or so countries around the world, and make them recognize Beijing. Well, they got, I think, three countries in 2019 to switch allegiances, one of them being the Solomon Islands. They put enormous pressure on the Kingdom of Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, to switch allegiances, and it just steadfastly refused. Not because King Mswati is immune from temptation of the cash from Beijing, but because Beijing actually put their emphasis against him on threatening him rather than bribing him. So they had put in a number of teams from 2019 onwards into Eswatini to try to kill the king. Well, I think before you offer the guy money, you've got to somehow apologize or make good on why you tried to kill the guy, and they didn't do that. So, and by the way, the Taiwanese have been very good to Eswatini as a whole. They've done a lot of investments in Eswatini. They've done a lot of training of technicians, of military personnel, and so on in Taiwan. So they've actually been extremely positive in their aid to Eswatini, and it has shown. Basically, Eswatini is a prosperous country, despite the fact that the PRC has been hell-bent on destroying it. And so, by the way, has the African National Congress, which runs the Republic of South Africa next door. This is ironic because the king of Swaziland, now Eswatini, had been the original funder of the African National Congress in the early 1900s, 1908, and so on, and then again in 1921, in order to help the ANC spearhead the anti-colonial movement throughout southern Africa. It was a Pan-African movement, which only later became a South African political party. And the South African government, in an attempt to placate the old king, King Sobhuza of Eswatini in the 1960s and so on, offered the Swazi government at the time that they would restore some of the lands taken from Eswatini by South Africa. That included a lot of the land west of Swaziland, right up to and including Johannesburg. Not that the South Africans were going to offer that much back, but also the lands which linked what is now landlocked Eswatini with the Indian Ocean across northern KwaZulu-Natal. That was originally Swati territory as well. So that was all going to be returned, which is would have been about, I guess, 30% of the stolen lands of Swaziland. It was all going to be returned to Swaziland. The ANC, operating as a guerrilla force in exile against South Africa, pleaded with the king not to accept this deal and said, when we get into power in South Africa, we'll give you all of your land back. And that would have included, as I say, Johannesburg, the vast fertile areas of what was then the Orange Free State, and so on. And that, so the king succumbed to that. And then, of course, when the ANC came into power, particularly with its new leaders like Nelson Mandela, they absolutely ignored and reneged on that promise. And now you can't find an ANC member who even knows that this promise was made. And by the way, I have copies of all of those documents on this. But so you have then had the ANC working against the kingdom of Swaziland and wanting to invade and take it over. And then you had the situation when the People's Republic of China came into Africa. They allied themselves with the ANC and saw South Africa as their crown jewels in Africa. And so they supported the ANC and South Africa and then supported them in trying to overthrow the kingdom of Swaziland. So it's been a turbulent history. And yet through all of that, this wonderful little kingdom, which is like the Switzerland of Africa, it's a beautiful countryside, very green, very prosperous agriculturally and the like, and now has big reserves of diamonds and so on. They are now fighting for their existence. And you've got divisions within the royal family of Swaziland. And you'll see all of these references throughout the media that Swaziland or Eswatini is an absolute monarchy. And this is an absolutely nonsensical statement. It's a constitutional monarchy. And in fact, the king is constantly battling the prerogatives of parliament, which often is very, very much more conservative than the monarchy itself. And the monarchy itself is not just a single king. It's a dual monarchy in which the queen mother is the co-regent. And the queen mother, who I met also, is not what you'd call progressive. And she's allowed herself to be influenced by people who think that the king shouldn't be making certain decisions. And the king had been accepting the advice of the army and how to secure the country. And now the king's basic supporters within the army, including the recent commander of the Umbutfo Eswatini Defense Force, General Geoffrey Shabalala. I mean, he was removed, and so the king is now more or less isolated. And what we see in recent weeks and months is agitation, violent groups attempting to attack the king, and these are backed by the PRC. And as I said, the PRC put in hit teams in 2019, early 2020, to try to kill the king from South Africa. They put in these armed teams, which were thwarted largely by General Shabalala.
All right. I want to go to a news event that you cite in your report, Voice of the People News, July 30, 2022. I think that's just a few hours ago. July 30, 2022. King Mswati's escort vehicles were badly damaged after a, quote, accident. The implication being that it was a deliberate attack on the king's vehicles in Carolina, in the ethnically Swati area of what is now the South African state of Mpumalanga. Okay, is that an assassination attempt, and was anything done about it? Do we know who were there shooters, or was it an explosion? What do we know about it?
Can't get definitive material because it occurred in South Africa. I think it would have been known, or should have been known, that the king was not in the vehicles in the convoy at the time, because normally what happens is that the king has been sending his convoy vehicles ahead to wherever he's going, and then he flies to the place in a helicopter to avoid exactly this kind of situation. But it was clearly a deliberate attack on the king. Perhaps not very well orchestrated, but there were people killed in the accident or in the incident. So you know, yes, it's a sign that things are continuing to re-escalate against the king, and so the king is very much on the defensive. He has some foreign security types around him, but I think he can't count on the defense force at this stage because frankly, the defense force is not as tightly organized in the role of suppressing assassins as it was under General Geoffrey Shabalala.
What I know about this part of the world and the larger story of the conflict between the Russian Federation and NATO is that the BRICS include South Africa, and the BRICS have been entertaining expanding. They mentioned Argentina, for example, as a new addition, or maybe even Saudi Arabia. Does the fact that Russia and now China working together to expand their region, you know that the detail that half of the G20 has not sanctioned Russia. So we do not have a world united against the foe that we did 80 years ago. But in any event, is the fact that South Africa is working with Russia and China in some diplomatic fashion, does that weigh on Eswatini's fate?
The cooperation with the People's Republic of China weighs on Eswatini's fate. I do not believe that Russia is in any way engaged in this struggle at all, and nor do I think that it is actively an influence with the ANC government in South Africa at all. I mean, the whole BRICS thing is a bit of a joke. It's more bric-a-brac than brick. To expand it to include a bankrupt Argentina, which is really in massive decline, is a joke. And South Africa itself, even the current president has just in the last week or so told his party Congress that the country is in the worst state it's been since it became independent, or since the apartheid era. So its economy is collapsing. The country is in grave danger of breaking apart into at least three separate units, one of them being KwaZulu-Natal, and the other one being the Eastern Cape, and probably other parts would break away as well. But the South African Defence Forces are not capable of holding it together. They are, although they're the best equipped military in the region, but the reality is that that South Africa is in free fall. Strategic free fall, and we don't know how much longer it's going to go. So within this chaos, even the ANC itself is fragmented, and the great radicals who are used almost as a second army by Beijing include the ANC's youth wing, for example, which is the one more closely connected with the ANC's communist roots. Bearing in mind that the ANC, although it started as a black nationalist movement, an African nationalist movement in like around 1908, it became involved with the South African Communist Party under people like Joe Slobo and the like. So basically, the ANC itself is a pretty messy organization. It's divided along ethnic lines, many different ethnic groups within South Africa, and it's also divided along ideological and historical lines. And it was only the miracle that Nelson Mandela, when he first came into power, basically and very suddenly made a transformation from being a very angry man wanting to invade all of the neighbors to being one who saw his future as being a peacemaker. And that really is the only thing that gave South Africa any credibility in the post-apartheid era. But then you get to the point now where people like the current president, Cyril Ramaphosa, basically have seen the country disintegrate through massive, massive corruption.
Right. Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, says trouble in Europe. They're out of energy. They're out of time. When we come back, I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.